I'm Al McFarland. You're listening to Conversations with Al McFarland. Sweet tune. Beautiful tune. An appropriate tune by the Isleys. And, you know, it's about the children. And what more poignant way to introduce the rest of the program today. I'm pleased to have in studio two people that I hold in high esteem. I think you do as well. Carolyn Smallwood is the CEO of Way to Grow, and her colleague is Art Rolnick. He's a senior fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, a former leader at the Federal Reserve here in Minnesota, and a thinker, a philosopher, an activist, as both of them are. And we're here talking about children. Carolyn, first of all, thank you for the work you do. Thank you for being here. Let's let our people know about the Way to Grow value proposition. What's the mission? What's the vision?
Thank you, Al, for having me on today. Way to Grow's mission primarily is to ensure that every child has an equal opportunity to succeed in school and life. We want children to be born healthy, stay healthy, and ready for school. Our organization has been around since 1989. And some of you know that the organization was actually started by our previous mayor, Don Frazier, and the president and CEO, Honeywell, Jim Rainier, as well as with the support of Way to Grow.
And so the scenario, the environment out of which this was created, describe that.
The scenario that Way to Grow was created, these leaders and founders in the community during this time in 1989, realized that majority of our children that were entering the school systems, and this is what's happening throughout the United States, were not prepared for school. So they decided to create what they call a home visiting model that would work with families one-on-one in their homes. But at the same time, they wanted it to be a multicultural organization where we brought folks in from the community that could relate to the community to work with these parents one-on-one.
And so how long have you been with the organization? How long have you been with the organization?
I've been with the organization for 13 years.
Okay.
And it's been wonderful.
Great, great. What are the benchmarks, the high points so far, and what have been the challenges?
The benchmarks for our organizations thus far is that we're not only serve Minneapolis, throughout Minneapolis, we've been able to serve over 2,400 folks last year, which really equates to about 66,000 people since 1989. So our key elements are that our kids that we serve are ready for school. Last year, we had over 90% of our kids deemed ready for school. Our K through third students were reading at or above grade level, as well as had improved. But what's most importantly is that we believe that the parent is the primary educator of the child. Huge parent engagement, involved the Way to Grow, 7 different languages that's spoken in our organizations. We also have 2 preschools, one located north and the other is located south Minneapolis area. Parent Aware rated 4 accredited schools, and all those schools are doing very, very well. The challenges have been thus far making sure we're able to serve more families, as well as retain and grow our organization, not only within Minneapolis area, but to be able to follow our families into the 6 surrounding suburbs, because a lot of our families are moving out of Minneapolis for affordable housings. So that's been a challenge as well.
Is our community responding properly? How much more do parents need to know? How much more do policymakers need to know? Is the information about this network, this series of challenges, common in our community? And I raise the question to get a sense of how much buy-in is there abroad in the community? Are people genuinely owning the challenge and owning the opportunity that lies before us, right? I mean, this, you know, we're in an environment where people are critical of the educational institutions because there is so much talk about failure and gaps in achievement and in accomplishment. But at the same time, we know that that's not the full story.
Right.
And I think that you are here to say, you know what? Yes, there are challenges, but there are some wonderful things that are happening that simply need to be elevated, highlighted, replicated, expanded. And that's the basis of my question. What is the community awareness and how much is the community involved and supportive of the vision you shared?
Well, first of all, amen to what you said, because there's a lot of great things that's going on in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, Way to Grow is not the only organization that has put a footprint that has taken a hold of this educational disparities. That's many groups, many organizations that are out there in Minneapolis that's trying to do the work. And matter of fact, they are succeeding in doing the work. But what's interesting about all of this is that parents are beginning to even step up even more. As long as we continue educating our families and informing them and sharing information and empowering them, as well as alleviating some of those barriers that are associated with them not being able to get their kids ready for school, I think that this whole paradigm shift is beginning to happen, and it is happening at the particular time. As far as policymakers are concerned, yes, some of the policymakers have stepped up to early education and education in general. But I really do believe that it's going to be the responsibility, not only the communities, but the parents to step up and give voice to basically what is needed into the communities. Keep in mind, we serve families that's working multiple jobs, okay, at times, that are sometimes very isolated in the community, that basically need some resources. And that's what Way to Grow is there for as well. I see it happening day by day. What we see is once we see or our parents understand that their child is doing better, we see our parents step up even more.
I'm Al McFarland. This is Conversations with Al McFarland. My guest, Carolyn Smallwood, she's the CEO of Way to Grow. Joining her, Art Rolnick, senior fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, former leader of the Federal Reserve here in Minnesota. Art, let me ask you to jump in. Thank you for being here, first of all.
Al, thank you. I, too, want to thank you for giving us a chance to tell the Way to Grow story and the more broad story about the importance of early childhood education.
Well, let's focus right there. Sure. I mean, so let me tell you about my Art Rolnick picture. I have followed you in your work and career as a leader in the financial sector, as a leader in the Federal Reserve, and I always wondered how come you were so invested in education. And so now I have a chance to ask you.
Good question.
What's the guy who's running the Federal Reserve being out in front on education? But it makes all the sense in the world, but I want to hear it from you.
It does make a lot of sense, but it was serendipity. You know, I tell people I used to worry about banks, now I worry about babies. And I got to blame former Governor Al Cui and former Mayor Don Frazier. They started an organization about 17 years ago called Ready for K, Ready for Kindergarten. And I heard their speeches on why it's important. And I was kind of critical. I said, guys, you're making a moral argument, which is a good argument. But I said, I'm guessing you could make an economic argument. And I tell everybody that was my mistake, because they said, okay, Art, how would you come on our board and do that for us? And that's what I did. And I was a bit critical at first. I was kind of the skeptic. But then I started looking at these longitudinal studies and what a difference it makes if you get high-quality early education at the beginning. And this is what's so important about Way to Grow. We empower the parents. We start prenatal. The early years are critical. The neuroscientists got a hold of me, and they showed me the research on brain development and how much of that brain, like up to 80%, is developed by age 3. And if a child's in a stressful environment, and I want you to equate stress with poverty, that brain doesn't develop properly. They sense the stress in the family. And so, but through programs like Way to Grow, we know how to work with the families, empower the families, reduce the stress, and we're getting incredible results. Carolyn mentioned something like 90% of our kids start ready. In Minnesota, the average number of kids per year is about 70% start ready. Poverty kids, it's 30%. So when you take a program like Way to Grow and they go from 30% to 90%, that's how we've been able to get the business community supporting us. They recognize these kids, they're our future. They're our future economy. We have to have all our kids succeeding in school. We can't afford to let 30, 40% of our kids fall behind and not catch up and not graduate high school. So it's been very satisfying to me to see the business community to come here, write checks. And so we provide mentors, we provide early learning scholarships, And we work with the parents. Many of our parents are going back to school. They're going back to work. It's a two-generational approach. It has gone viral. Yeah, I've been all over the world on this issue, and I brag about Way to Grow because they're doing it on the ground. It's not just theory. Mm-hmm. It's not just research now. We're actually doing it in the real world, and it's programs like Way to Grow that's proving that we can do this. We can, you know, it's often the public schools are getting blamed for the achievement gap. It starts well before they get the kids.
Right, right. It starts in the social structure.
Right at the very beginning in the social structure.
So let's go back to that. And so I think that you know, you said so much, and I want to focus on economics.
Sure.
How do we create an economic reality that empowers families, individuals, to provide environments that nurture the best in their children and the best in themselves? I say that saying that what exists too often, particularly in my community, is what you've described as an aggressive stress syndrome, where people don't know what's going to happen tomorrow,
right,
and where they also are as sensitive as individuals, as the shot monitors are. People in our neighborhood have the same feeling about shots fired because they hear it.
Right.
Down the street, ambulances. There's this high pressure that's omnipresent. And that environment cannot be good. It cannot be good. It cannot be healthful for babies and children and parents, et cetera. And so you've described that. So to address that, the question is, how much of that is our society willing to peel back and examine the roots of and examine solutions that may mean structural change in our social and economic organization? Am I going somewhere with this?
Oh, you absolutely are. And we realize why we focus a lot on parents, family at a time. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it's the community getting together and recognizing the importance of these early years and getting a safe environment for our kids. We do it family by family first. Mm-hmm. Community parent coaches are critical here. So our parents know when they're in a stressful environment, there's somebody they can call, there's somebody that can help them, there's somebody that can connect them to existing resources. Often these parents don't know this.
Right.
And that's the beginning of helping to reduce stress. But ultimately, you need the community together. So now we have lawn signs, for example, on the north side that says, future college graduate lives here. Mm-hmm. And we have marches now to march for a college education. We're going to make this community safe. We don't want people to leave. We want to build from the community from the ground up. So we start with the family, but we build out. And we need it all. I understand it's not easy. Mm-hmm. But we're getting a great return. So even if I only get 50% of the families, I'm going to still get you, from an economic point of view, which we did the analysis, a double-digit return. We got an 18% inflation-adjusted return. Come on, guys. We can't find a better public investment than these kids. We can't. Don't want to get me started, but a lot better investment than investing in another stadium.
Mm-hmm. Or another jail.
Or another jail. That's the real poignant thing. Because our kids succeed in school, short-term and long-term, they're more successful in life. We reduce crime dramatically. The need for these jails, that's the whole point. If you don't pay now, you're going to pay later. The return is, and people say, well, this is expensive to do it. No, it's expensive not to do it.
So, Carolyn, I come to this as a journalist and as a cynic and as a skeptic. And with the willingness to charge our society, to charge our country and our community with willful neglect of the pain, of the trauma that has been inflicted on people of African descent. I call myself an African in the New World, and my multi-generational experience here is a process or is a product of the transatlantic slave trade. When I talk to my white friends, they'll say, oh, I wasn't here then. That's not my problem. I'm not responsible for that. Don't cry to me. And or, when are you going to get over it? Forget about it. I say, hell no, not getting over it, not forgetting about it. because some resolution has to take place and healing has to occur. The healing that you're talking about, I believe, in nurturing fully formed, integrity-filled human beings, fully children and humans that have self-worth, dignity. This means that there's been some kind of reconciliation of the contradiction of our experience. What do you think?
You know what? You're bringing up some excellent points. First of all, no, we cannot forget. But what we can do is to move forward and attempt to build our community one step at a time, family by family. One of the most important things that we can do is that I feel is that understand the historical content for where we came from, but at the same time, learn from those experiences and share that information with our children. A lot of our children don't realize what was lost to get us here, even though sometimes that here does not appear to be so great.
But it really is.
But it really is.
It's phenomenal.
It's phenomenal.
It's amazing.
We come a long way.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it's very unfortunate when I hear that our children do not know I've passed, do not understand I've passed, because they have not been given that information. So I think overall as a community, we need to continue educating our children so they can be very constructive, intelligent, strong-willed adults that's going to add value to our society. One of the things that I've learned with working with Way to Grow is that we are part of the network of this community. And I mean that sometimes, and a lot of times, me as a member of the organization, I stop outside of my office, my door, to talk to the young people out on the street. That's all of our responsibilities. And I tell our white counterparts the same thing. These are all our children because they are the future of our community. Whether or not we want it or not, they're part of us. And we're all the same. Rather, I don't care what creed, race you come from, we all are God's children and we're human beings. And it's our responsibility to teach and to learn and to be compassionate and tolerant of folks that are being different. And we have, and all of this knowledge starts at home, but it also starts from the community. A lot of these grown people that are walking around here can educate these young children.
And a lot
as well.
Of them have bad information, right?
Exactly, right. At the same time.
I'm Al McFarland. This is Conversations with Al McFarland. I'm talking with Carolyn Smallwood. She's CEO of Way to Grow, and her colleague, Art Rolnick, is a senior fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs here at the University of Minnesota. I'm going to continue this conversation and go deep. I'm interested, I'm intrigued about the economics and how we look at, how does teaching a two-year-old, a three-year-old, preparing a one-year-old for education, how does that put one more peg in the movement towards transformation of our country? What is the power of protecting and shaping one mind, one child, in a way that that child's life matters so deeply that his or her life is part of the transformation of America, bringing America to the fullest of this great experiment called democracy? And what does that child's development mean for human beings? For humanity? That's the deep question. Stay tuned.
Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. Time for looking ahead. The world has changed so very much for what it used to be. There is so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe they'll listen
at what you have to say, 'cause they're the ones who's coming up. The world is in their hands. When you teach the children, they're gonna do the very best they can. Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we can do it if we just lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, we do it all the time. Let it be. The world won't get no better. You gotta change the world. You and me. You and me. We gotta stand up. Come on.
I'm Al McFarland. This is Conversations with Al McFarland. That's the music of my brother, with my favorite musician, Wayne McFarland. His new label, new band, the Dreadlock Cowboys, his music released this weekend, actually, at the Minnesota State Fair, where he performed for several days. So big up to Wayne McFarland. Timely message. Again, it sort of fits right into this conversation. I'm talking in studio with Carolyn Smallwood, CEO of Way to Grow, and her colleague, Art Rolick, senior fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs here at University of Minnesota. And we're talking about how our community wakes up. How do we decide that we have an obligation, a responsibility to the future, and that obligation lies within our capacity to protect and nurture children? That's the mission of Way to Grow, and you've demonstrated that it is possible. So the question is, how do we marshal the resources, marshal the public will? How do we create a public mind that makes this second nature? It's like breathing. It's like walking. It's what we do. It's who we are. It's how we define ourselves as citizens in this country and in the world. Art, take off from there. What do you do? How do we get our people fired up about this?
So let me take you back a few years. Mm-hmm. President Obama held a summit on early childhood education. I'm pretty sure it was the first summit ever held at the White House on early childhood. I don't think George Washington had it. I don't think Abraham Lincoln, but Barack Obama recognized the importance of this issue. And there were about 100 of us from around the country. And your question kind of came up a number of times. And I made the following comments. Now, I'm from Detroit, so keep that in mind. And I pointed out to the White House, it had been maybe a year or two before they had just bailed out the automobile industry in Detroit and hoping to make that economy. And I understand why they did that. But I said to them, it's roughly 75% of the children in the Detroit public schools do not graduate. What is that economy going to look like 5, 10 years from now? And this economy that demands education, demands skills, more so than ever in the next 20 years is going to be even that much more important. It is critical that these kids succeed. And we now have the research and the programs to help guarantee those results. And one of those programs, it's all about starting early. Most educators now will tell you. The neuroscientists will tell you. The economists now will tell you. There's very little debate. You start at the beginning. You provide tools to our most vulnerable kids and our most vulnerable families. What tools? You provide coaching. You provide scholarships so they can go to high-quality rated programs. And watch out. Watch these kids from Way to Grow, for example, and I use that as an example. They're starting school healthy and ready to learn, not starting far behind. Mm-hmm. When they start far behind on average, they don't catch up. Mm-hmm. But when they start healthy and ready to learn, and this is Jeffrey Canada, the Harlem Children's Zone, watch out. These kids in the moon. They're incredible how well they're doing already in the fourth grade. We're showing terrific results, that there is no achievement gap if you start early and doing it right. So these are all our children in the sense that our society is so much better when we all succeed. Mm-hmm. So when people say to me, well, you know, this is the mother's job, this isn't my concern, I say no. Most of these benefits that we showed, the economic benefits, fewer of our kids need special ed. Our kids grow up, graduate high school, get a job, pay taxes, stay off welfare, crime rate goes way down. There's huge savings to the public. So these are public investments with a great public return. That's how I think we organize our communities, the nation behind this. And I would tell you, if looking around the various states, we have business leaders and governors saying, yes, this is where we have to invest now. So we have made a lot of progress, partly because the White House took this on as a major issue. Mm-hmm. But I want to say there's various communities around the country that are doing this from the ground up. So it's got to come from both places. Communities have to step to the plate. We need our voices of all our parents to say this is critical. And we all, and that's why I'm thrilled to be on your program here to get this message out. This isn't going to happen if we don't raise our voices. We have to say it's unacceptable that these kids are not starting school healthy and ready to learn. We know how to fix this. And when people, again, say it's too expensive, I say no, it's too expensive not to do it.
So who are the naysayers? I mean, why is it not so already? What is the model that allowed things to progress to this status of disparity? How did we get here?
We got here because poverty families have very little political clout in our economy. They don't have the voice. That's why I was very excited when the business leaders in this community stepped to the plate. That's the kind of political clout we need. Now we need our poverty families to realize they have a say in this economy. They have a say with their children, and they need to step to the plate. If you look in the past, who votes, who has political clout, it's not these families. Mm-hmm. So we have to organize. Again, that's why we and Carolyn and I try to get this story out wherever we can, because we need the community to say, no longer acceptable. Every 3 years, we don't do this every 3 years, we lose a generation. Mm-hmm. And we have to do it now. We don't need to, I'm a research guy, but we've got so much research, we don't need to wait 5, 10 years for more research. Now is the time to do it. Now is the time to fund it. And over the next year or two, working with the gubernatorial candidates and other politicians, we plan on raising the state funding. Right now it's at $70 million. Mm-hmm. We need to raise it to $400 million. And we need everybody who understands this issue to step to the plate, if you will, and say, $400 million. That's the number we aim for. So every child born into poverty in this state will have a Way to Grow type program and will succeed.
There was a struggle getting to $70
million. That was a big struggle.
And I have to give credit where it's due. I think our governor, Mark Dayton, has been exemplary, has been a powerful voice in raising the question about funding preschool, pre-K.
He's been the leader, I'd say, in the country. If you look at governors around the country, now some of them are starting to follow him. Mm-hmm. There's some pretty good ones around there, but Governor Dayton has kept this, made this a front page story, top of the fold, the importance of early childhood education. And he helped get us something initially, $50 million for our early learning scholarship. scholarships. Mm-hmm. Eventually, we got a Race to the Top grant as well, mm-hmm. And now we're up to $70 million state funding per year. That's great, and we're getting the great results,
yep.
But we've got to fully fund it for every child born. It's unacceptable morally and economically.
And, Carolyn, what happens when we're fully funded? How does our community look? How does our future look when we have provided what we should be providing to every child, every family?
What our community would look like is, number one, more educated children, thriving families. Because what we see is that once our parents see their children are going to be okay, they start thriving, going back to school, going back to college, getting a better job. Which in turn means that as an organization, we serve the entire family. So once our kids are educated, they're ready for the workforce. Mm-hmm. They're going to graduate from high school as well as possibly from post-secondary education. Teenage pregnancy will decrease. You know, last year, 100% of our teen parents did not have a repeat pregnancy in our program. So we're seeing the results. One thing I want to add to your conversation with Art is that I think another reason how we got here is because some of our policymakers have not been able to see through the eyes of those families out there on the ground, mm-hmm. have not been able to relate to that. Mm-hmm. Minnesota is known for an excellent education, mm-hmm. but it's considered and do have the largest educational gap among children of color. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Mm-hmm. We tend to focus on, this is just my opinion, we tend to focus on what is in front of us, what is dear to us, and et cetera. And what I mean by that is that the folks that have the power have to be able to at least see through the eyes of the folks that have issues that are struggling through this whole system, mm-hmm. that it's not as fortunate that as they are. Yes, we must give our parents the tools to have a voice and to advocate and say this is unacceptable, but both sides have to say it's unacceptable.
Do you see that happening now?
Slowly but surely. Mm-hmm. You know, I do see it happening. I see parents are becoming more empowered. I also see politicians are becoming more engaged because I also see business folks are becoming more engaged because bottom line is that if we do not have an educated workforce, that means that our economy will suffer overall.
I'm Al McFarland. This is Conversations with Al McFarland. My guest, you just heard the voice of Carolyn Smallwood. She's CEO of Way to Grow. And Art Rolnick, who's senior fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. We'll continue this conversation. But first, let me do some station business.
Programming is supported by AMPRS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, announcing AMPRS.org. Featuring music, arts, and cultural stories, including many produced here at KFAI. Information and audio at AMPRS.org. AMPRS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities.
Thanks for supporting KFAI in the most important way, by listening.
How about taking the next step? Visit kfai.org/donate and become a sustaining member.
Or increase your monthly giving by $5, $10, or $20 each month.
If you have a favorite program, you can even show your support by making a one-time special donation.
Your tax-deductible contributions will keep us on the air.
Thank you for listening and supporting KFAI Community Radio.
Gracias por escuchar y apoyar a la comunidad de radio KFAI.
You need us, and we need you. Take the first step in becoming a KFAI volunteer by registering at kfai.org/volunteer. Sign up for a new volunteer orientation hosted on the first Thursday of every month at 6:30 p.m. and find your on- or off-air role today.
KFAI is supported by Ramsey County, reminding listeners that you likely have hazardous chemicals hiding in your home.
Many household products to control pests or clean your kitchen and bathroom contain chemicals that can harm the environment and humans.
Ramsey Recycles reminds listeners not to toss chemicals in the trash or pour them down the drain. Instead, hazardous chemicals can be disposed of safely at Ramsey County's free household hazardous waste disposal sites.
More information at RamseyRecycles.com.
programming on KFAI is supported in part by YouCare Choices, health plans for the young and adventurous, families with kids, entrepreneurs, empty nesters, and everything in between. YouCare has over 30 years of experience in caring for Minnesotans. More information is available online at youcarechoices.org.
KFAI is listener supported. Donate online today at kfai.org to support Fresh Air Community Radio.
Welcome to MN90, Minnesota History in 90 seconds.
A low, rasping moan started rising from somewhere on the floor above them, from within the darkened church proper. The entire class fell silent.
As author of the book The Nearly Departed, Minnesota Ghost Stories and Legends, Michael Norman has heard many Minnesotans talk about their encounters with the supernatural. But the so-called lutefisk ghost is probably the most distinctly Minnesotan of those tales.
It involves a wonderful pastor named Terry Hauskin at a church in Vang, which is outside Denison. On one particular occasion, when Terry Hauskin was teaching a catechism class, they all heard a very loud, distinct moaning. The lutefisk element is that the ghost tends to appear or tends to be noisiest right around the annual fall lutefisk dinner. The women who prepare the lutefisk dinner for a number of years now find kitchenware moved around. The moan that they heard occurred at about the same time, as I recall.
MN90 is a co-production of the Minnesota Historical Society and AMPRS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, online at mn90.org.
Programming on KFAI is supported by the Hook and Ladder Theater, presenting a party on Saturday, September 8th, in celebration of their first anniversary.
As a thanks to the community for the support, the gathering features food, fun, and music all night long with performances by Ian Alexi and the Deserters, Paul Burgeon's Astronauts of Rhythm and Sound, Poverty Hash, The Toxines, Leanne Smith, Rocksteady, and Trash Street.
Food available at 5 o'clock. Music starts at 6. Information is available at thehookminneapolis.com.
I'm Al McFarland. This is Conversations with Al McFarland. I'm glad you're here. This has been a great program today. We're talking about education. I'm pleased to have in studio two leaders, two guardian stewards of the public trust, of the mission, of the vision of creating a positive experience for all families, for all children. Carolyn Smallwood is the CEO of Way to Grow. Her colleague, Art Rolnick, is a senior fellow at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. Carolyn, Way to Grow. You said it at the beginning. Let's say it again. Let's give people Way to Grow 101. Define, again, the organization, the number of people you work with, the mission that you are delivering to community day by day.
Our mission is that we want children to be born healthy, stay healthy, and are ready for school. Our vision is that each child should have an equal opportunity to succeed in school and life. Last year, we served over 2,400 kids. 2,400 families, and of those 2,400 people were 1,400 children. We start early, prenatally to grade 3, age 8, mm-hmm. and we call that our Great by 8 initiative. Deep home visiting model that provide family support services, such as connecting them folks to their primary needs, food, clothing, housing, and medical. We have to stabilize the home first. Second part, health education, a really deep health education programming that we have seminars on, prenatal classes, first parent classes, as well as cookie matter classes, where we actually bring in a chef to provide nutritional food to our parents and to cook food and show our parents how to do that, as well as our early education program, where we bring in literacy tools in the home, where we model our services one-on-one with our parents in reading and writing and numeracy. Then we follow those kids through K through third into the school systems. Currently, we follow our kids into about 35 Minneapolis public schools and 20 charter schools, where we're working with the parent, the teacher, and the child to ensure that that child is not only ready for school, but prepared to finish the third grade reading at or above grade level. And of course, we have a very strong parent engagement component where we are empowering parents to advocate on behalf of early education, as well as we have what we call family nights where we have nutrition instruction again, as well as numeracy and literacy as well in those family nights. So our parents are very, very engaged. Last year, over 90% of our parents attended at least one parent-teachers conference, which is required. And, of course, we have two preschools, one located in the Center for Families over North. The other is located in Urban Venture as well. Parent-aware rated preschools, accredited preschools. And then, of course, our teen parenting program, where we have whole programming once a month on behalf of our teen parents, and they receive home visits as well.
Go ahead. Well, that's a lot.
Let me ask you,
you've got an important event coming up October 27th. It's called the Shine Celebration. What's it all about?
Oh, wow. We have a big fundraiser every year on behalf of our families and children, and where we bring our board of directors and the community together to basically to celebrate and to raise dollars and funds. Our Shine Celebration, the theme is Blessings in Disguise. And believe me, our children are blessings in disguise, will be held at the Minneapolis Depot on October 27th, starting at 6 a.m. Entertainment, Michael T. Rambo will be the master of ceremony, as well as we will have a family, a parent that we will be talking on behalf of Way to Grow. We're really excited about that as well.
6 a.m. or 6 p.m.?
6 p.m.
p.m., okay.
Excuse me.
All right.
Did I say 6 a.m.?
Yeah,
6
early.
p.m. And then we have Art Roneck, who's going to be our guest speaker.
I'm the pretty
face.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's the pretty face.
Let me turn to Art.
Okay.
Carolyn, thank you so much. You know, so Art, what I take away from this conversation so far, among many things, is that we have demonstrated that it can be done.
Exactly.
This can happen. Way to Grow is a textbook case of what happens when parents, educators, children, business, policy leaders make a commitment and follow through. They deliver. And you have generated phenomenal results. But the question, Art Roneck, is why isn't this being done for all vulnerable children? Talk about that, if you would.
So I'm asking the same question that you just asked. It is time to make the access to high-quality early education available to every child born into poverty. I actually think, starting with Don Fraser many, many years ago, we have educated the public. If you do a survey of the public, they're behind us on this. Politicians, as Carolyn said, are starting to see this. The business community, I want to give a shout-out to them. 15 years ago, with the help of Cargill and Target and Best Buy and Ecolab, got behind this issue. So I think we're almost there. I think the next year or two is going to be critical in order to get all this funding. I think we're not there yet because not everybody's voice is being heard. And as I said earlier, we need everybody to give a shout out to this issue so we fully fund it. This state creates something like $330 billion a year in gross state product, the amount of goods and services we produce. We're a very rich state. We can easily afford to do this. We haven't done this because we haven't had the understanding. We haven't had the full political commitment. I think we're close to it now. I think this is a critical year or two so that the next budget, this is fully funded.
Mm-hmm. Are some people hesitant because they think to give means they will lose? What is the block? Why isn't the entire public on board?
I think there are some that just think this is the mother's issue and it's not theirs.
Okay.
And I think they lack an understanding of how critical those early years are, and that if we provide the tools to these parents, we all benefit. Schools are more productive. Teachers are more productive. Our society is much better. We haven't quite gotten that out fully to the few critics out out there, but actually, over the years, the critics have sort of faded away because Way to Grow shows it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
The original critics either said this isn't mine, or even if it is a problem, we don't know how to fix it. Mm-hmm. We don't have the research, you know, isn't true in practice. Well, Way to Grow, and there's some other organizations like that doing it, so now we have the research, we've done it. We have the evidence. So I think we're there now in the sense that we've got everything in place, except we need the community to speak out and say, okay, guys, today, not 5 years from now, today, fully funded.
Carolyn, I'll close with you. You can make the invitation one more time. Invite people to this important event coming up in October. And also invite them to get busy right now.
Get busy right now, like Al said. Get busy right now. We need you out there. Please come out to our event on October 27th at the Minneapolis Depot at 6 o'clock. It's a big fundraiser on behalf of our families and children. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm Al McFarland. Been a wonderful program. Thanks to Carolyn Smallwood. Thanks to Art Rolnick. Join us again next time for Conversations with Al McFarland.